Chair Collins.
Here.
Legislator Kovacs.
Here.
Legislator Litz.
Here.
Legislator McCullough is not here. Legislator Nolan.
Here.
Legislator Sperry is not here. Legislator Uchitel.
Here.
You have quorum.
Thank you very much. Can I get a motion to approve the August 22nd, 2024 meeting minutes, please?
So moved.
Your second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we will do a presentation by the Open Space Institute. Before we do that, I have a couple things to say. One is, a number of us have a hard stop at 6 p.m. So we will hold that. We will stop at 6 p.m. We have a hard stop then. We have other things to get to. There is letters that are attached to the packet that people may have had. I don't think I want to take the time to address those letters right now. I think we'll just go straight to the presentation. Kevin, who's doing the presentation?
That would be Mr.
Harris. Oh, thank you very much. Sorry, over there.
Hello, good evening, Mr. Collins, and legislators, and that whole house.
Okay, hi there.
Yes,
better. Hi. Good afternoon, Legislator Collins and some committee legislators and full house here tonight. My name is Peter Karras, and I'm a landscape architect and vice president for parks and stewardship at the Hope and Space Institute. I'm based right here in the Hudson Valley, and I've been working on trails most of my career. And most recently, past decade, really delving into shared use trails and greenway trails. And we're here tonight to make a short presentation on our assessment of the county-owned Ulster and Delaware corridor from the city of Kingston to Basin Road, but specifically the undesignated section that's in the county policy. So a little about the Open Space Institute. We are a nonprofit land conservation organization based here in New York. We work all across the East Coast to protect land for people, for climate, for habitat. And we also think a lot about public access to public lands and their connections to communities. And as I said, we're based here in New York. We're actually from the Hudson Valley, and most of our work continues to be in this region. You may have seen some of our projects in the past, and especially in Ulster County. You've been on the Walkill Valley Rail Trail and Rosendale Trestle. That is an OSI project with partners. We've also been rebuilding the historic carriage roads across the Shawangunk Ridge, including the River to Ridge Trail. Fun fact, we're approaching our 1 millionth trip on River to Ridge since 2018. So quite popular and a game changer. If you've been to Minnewaska, you've seen a new Minnewaska Visitor Center. That is a vision of OSI and really lands people in that world-class landscape in a world-class way. And most recently, we're doing a full corridor study of the O&W Rail Trail from Kingston to Port Jervis through Ulster, Sullivan, and Orange County. County's been a real strong partner in that effort, and that culminated last year with the completion of a $2 million ARPA grant from Ulster County to complete about 13 miles of rail trail on the Walkill and the O&W. So we've got a long history of success and a long partnership with Ulster County around trails. We are focused on landscape scale conservation and access. Our current focus west of the Hudson River is what we call Growing Greenways. It's a trail network, as I said, from Ulster, Sullivan, Orange County, 7 trail corridors. Would be over 250 miles in length and the largest feeder trail system into the Empire State Trail in Kingston. And Kingston becomes quite a hub of rail trails when you look regionally in the West Hudson Valley. And we do this for a lot of reasons in support of our mission and as a public charity, doing this work in the public interest about connecting people to nature in safe and managed ways, connecting their communities. And we have found, most recently with our public survey on the O&W, overwhelming support for these kinds of trails in communities as we look across the three counties. Focused on Ulster County, Ulster has done a really fantastic job in creating access through these greenway trails. There's four major corridors that the county is involved with: the Walk Hill, the ONW, D&H, the Hudson Valley Rail Trail connecting the walkway with New Paltz, and then also the Ulster and Delaware line, which is shown as number one. And through COVID, you really saw a surge of use on all of these greenway trails. And I think that's reflected in a soon-to-be-released, if it's not already, update to the state of the trails by the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee. Focusing on the Ulster and Delaware corridor and the policy from 2015 that kind of dictates the use. Again, the county, you all know, owns from Kingston all the way to Highmount. Improvements have been made last year to the ONW connector coming out of Kingston. The Ashokan Rail Trail was a project that OSI participated in the feasibility of. It's a raging success. There's over 200,000 trips on the Ashokan Rail Trail every year now. And the county's also implementing work out in the Bel Air area with about 5 miles of trail and some pretty significant bridges. So bravo to Ulster County for all your work on greenway trails. And focusing in on the eastern portion of that corridor, you know, there's a mix. The policy creates a mixed use of the corridor, including the Casco Mountain Railroad's use of the 6 miles coming west out of Kingston, the Ashokan Rail Trail, which is about 11 miles, and then this undesignated section, 1.7 miles from 28A, the Basin Road. And this is a place where you know, OSI has focused some resources to get a real understanding of what's happening on the ground and what the feasibility of a trail corridor through there might be. So we, from 2021 to 2023, we worked with Green New Peterson engineers out of Albany. They also have an office here in Kingston. I think their reputation speaks for themselves, not only as engineers, but as planners and designers and implementers of greenway trails. And we've really studied the engineering feasibility with an exhaustive physical inventory of this of the whole corridor from Kingston to Basin Road, including the undesignated section. And there's just a couple of assumptions built into the study that I think is important to lay the foundation for what we worked on. You know, in OSI, we only work with willing landowners. We don't come up with plans and projects and force them on people. And we make assessments based on fact and sound investigation. This is true for our land protection work, our parks work, and also our advocacy work. And in the case of the UND corridor, we're here tonight to offer information and expertise regarding constructability of a shared use public trail through this corridor. We take no position for rail with trail or trail only. We study both scenarios, understanding that the rail line currently exists through the undesignated section, but we take no position in favor or against anything. We're really here to report facts and information. But we do believe that the public has a fundamental right to access public lands free of charge in a safe and welcoming manner, and any improvements to public assets should reflect this. And another assumption is that federal state funding would be an important part of any improvement project, and that would come with requiring adherence to applicable design standards. So baked into this feasibility study is what we would assume would be the standards that we have to adhere to either from the federal level or from the state level. We did look at this corridor in four segments. They're shown here in the different colors, and they're demarked by at-grade crossing. So for example, Washington Avenue to Route 209 would be a segment. 209 Hurley Mountain Road, Hurley Mountain Road to 28A, and 28A to Basin Road. We took a deep look at these segments, we did physical inventory and assessments of the conditions. As I said, we looked at alternatives, testing the county policy of rail with trail, then considering a trail-only option. We reviewed any anticipated approvals and permits for both alternatives, connections to adjacent trails and open spaces, and an order of magnitude cost estimates based on these assumptions. And this is all supported by a lot of foundational information, including surveys and land ownerships, 2-foot LiDAR topography, which is available publicly in Ulster County, historic railroad maps, deed research, easement research. We looked at the demographics surrounding the trail to feed into the analysis. And then we did some precedent research, looking at other places around the country, including in the Hudson Valley, where the railroad trail exists. So that's really kind of the foundation for this assessment. And then specifically on the trail design guidelines, we use the Empire State Trail Design Guide, which is really has become the pseudo state standard for greenway trails, and then also the ASHTO Guide for Development of Bicycle Facilities, which is a federal requirement to follow the ASHTO standard. That sets up parameters for separation distances and the way you cross roads and bridges and things like that. Another great resource that came out, and I would encourage everybody to look at this, is from 2021, an update by the USDOT on Rails with Trails Best Practices. This looks at, I think it's over 100 different scenarios or projects where rail with trail have been built concurrently. It was published in 2021, and this did feed into our analysis. We also looked at very specific projects that railroad trail projects, and I just want everybody to take note of the dimensionality of these examples. When you have a railroad trail next to each other, you have a shoulder, you have the trail, you have another shoulder, you have a ballast, you have the rails, ballast, shoulder. And it creates this dimensional cross-section for safety. So the Great Allegheny Passage is a good one. The Lehigh Gorge Railway and Trail near Jimport, Pennsylvania is another good one. The Allegheny Highlands Trail in Western Pennsylvania, again, take note of the cross-section. You get the same dimensionality and width of a dual-use corridor. And then right here at home on the Empire State Trail in Dutchess County, you have the Baybrook section, which was built by MTA. It was a double rail line, and they preserved the rail use through that corridor while building the Empire State Trail, basically from Hopewell Junction all the way to Brewster, is this condition. And this is this project right here is the basis for our analysis of the corridor. We actually got the MTA design drawings for the Baybrook section and really looked at their cross section and dimensionality, again, next to the rail, both vertically and horizontally. And what we did is developed our study standard, which takes into account all of those foundational items, and really, with our engineer, came up with what we think is a safe cross-section to co-locate a trail next to a rail line. And then also you can see the dimensionality of what a trail would require. And we know that the rail use works because it's there. Going here. Across the whole corridor from Kingston to Basin Road, our study looks at 10 comparison areas in what I call pinch points. These are locations that really take into account the fact that this line was built for one railroad. It's one rail line wide. And there are real pinch points when you come to bridges, when you come to road crossings, and some of the cuts and fills that exist on this line to make grades work for the old rail line. We're going to focus in here on the undesignated section only and show some of those comparisons. So from 28A to Basin Road, there's basically four locations that are worthy of comparison and are places that would require some significant interventions to make work, in our opinion. First is the at-grade crossing at 28A. There is a state-regulated wetland south of Ontario Lake that comes southeastern across the line. The bridge over Beesmer Road, small road, but it's a bridge goes over the public road. And then a significant rock cut that starts north of Beesmer Road and ends just on the north end of the undesignated section. So those are the four areas that in the undesignated section that we did some comparisons. So I'll start at 28A. 28A is an at-grade crossing at an obscure angle to the road. The approach from the south is pretty wet, pretty washed out, or at least it was in 2021 when we did this part of the inventory. And right next to it, actually, is an old road abutment. An old road went over the rail line here at one point in the future, and you can see there on the left, the large concrete abutment and fill area still exists. In plan view, you can see if I can figure this out. I guess not. 28A and the rail line intersect in the middle there with the orange dot. That's the at-grade crossing. You can see the ownership of Ulster County is, the line is to the north, south of 28A and north of 28. It's got a little bit of width next to the road. There's an old house there, and then you've got state land. This section's inside the blue line, so it's part of the Forest Preserve, New York State land, and right up against the rail corridor, the DEC owns land. There's a small old historic structure at this intersection too. You can see the two little rectangles in the upper left, also owned by the county as an old structure. Looking in plan view at the alternatives, so if rail or trail alternative, the rail assumption is that it would stay where it is. The trail is best located on the south side of the rail and will require some significant grading to make it work. That abutment would have to come out, you'd have to chase grade back with the fill, and you're likely to get into some private property taking to make that work, leaving the rails where they are. If the rails come out and it's trail only, if that's the route everybody's going, then it works, the abutment can stay, and a lot of those issues kind of go away. You still have an at-grade crossing, which is a significant improvement, and it would require a lot of study. But there is opportunity with a rail-only scenario to do a nice little trailhead at this location as well. The DEC wetland, just north of the 28A, you can see the Onteora Lake, the hydrology of the lake kind of continues south with state-regulated wetlands. It's bisected by Route 28 and the corridor and Route 28A itself. This is a snapshot from the DEC environmental mapper showing the state-regulated wetlands. In red is the corridor. And then light green is the 100-foot regulated buffer. So any work within that 100-foot regulated buffer that has ground disturbance associated with it would require DEC input, potentially a permit. This is the existing condition. It sits on a small prism, but you can see to the left and the right, the wetlands are pretty close. So if you can imagine a trail next to that rail, you'd have to do some filling, you'd have to build some kind of an improvement to make that work, and you're likely to impact directly the wetland area, which inside the blue line, I think, in my experience, is a pretty tough hurdle to overcome. Not insurmountable, but tough. The Beesmer Road Bridge, this is another pinch point. You can see in the picture on the left how narrow that is. It's really built for the railroad. And here's on the left is a picture from the road. It's a low bridge, but it's very narrow. It's got concrete abutments that slope steeply down. It's pretty significant constraint. In plan view, the rail works, so we know that a trail would work. If we look at co-locating rail with trail, effectively you'd have to build another bridge next to the Beesmer Road Bridge or fully replace that bridge for dual use. You also get into grading issues. You also might get into some property taking issues because the corridor is pretty narrow. Just to imagine what that might look like, the picture on the left is a scenario where you would build a trail bridge next to the rail bridge. The distance apart would have to be determined by further study, but this one's pretty close, but you can see it's a pretty significant intervention to carry a trail across that constraint. And then the big one, in my opinion, and the one that has probably the most environmental impact and cost associated with it, is the rock cut north of Beesmer Road. It's very significant, and you can see how constrained the width is. Again, if you remember back to those examples, those were a lot wider than we have through this rock cut. So a quick section of the rock cut, the width, the height of the rock varies. At its highest point, it's about 25, 30 feet tall. It goes from 0 to 25 to 30 to 0 through the cut. And generally speaking, there's about an 18-foot clear distance on the bottom with the rail line sitting squarely in the middle. So again, if the rail line's about, edge of ballast is 10 feet, you're looking at 4 feet either side through the rock cut. So here's an example, the Maybrook line. Again, if you look at that cross section, there's a rock cut, there's a shoulder, you have the rail corridor, shoulder, trail, shoulder, rock cut. So you start to get this extended 26 to 30 foot cross section to get that safely to work. And then on the rock cut, if you can imagine the existing condition on the right with the rails in the center, we would have to perform a major excavation of that rock to get that dual use to work. Not sure why this is taking. So in plan view, again, we would locate in the rail with trail scenario. You get that cross section, it looks pretty straight. We know that the trail works. And then what's really striking is when you think about the train coming through that rock cut, even in an expanded way, with the trail next to it, with the steep rock faces, it's a pretty imposing scenario. So the picture on the right, when you think about the scale of the train, and from what I've read, the speed of the train with improved tracks at about 25 miles an hour, to me that's a pretty daunting scenario coming through over half a mile rock cut on the undesignated section. One important point on this on the rock cut is just the general geology of the Catskills. It's sedimentary rock. When you expose it to weathering, it freezes and thaws and breaks and cracks and continues to decay. The rock cut is showing significant signs of that after 100 years, and a lot of that would have to be cleaned up. That also impacts how steep you can set the slope back. So for example, you probably can't do a vertical face or near vertical face on a rock cut with this type of geology. You'd have to lay that slope back. That means a wider disturbance. That means you're probably going to have more private property taking to get that to work. So in summary, at the 28A at-grade crossing, rail to trail requires some significant grading. At the DEC wetland, in both scenarios, will require consultation with DEC. Rail to trail will likely require a permit, freshwater wetland permit from DEC, which is very tough in our experience. The Beesmer Road Bridge will require another bridge or a modified new bridge for both uses, probably require private property taking. And then the rock cut has direct and indirect impacts. And I think I missed one point, if I can go back, which is on this slide on the bottom. This is what I refer to as an indirect impact. So that rock cut's about 3,600 feet long. We've estimated in the study to make that work rail to trail would require about 36,000 cubic yards of rock to be removed. When you factor in swell, which rock swells when you excavate it to truck it away, you're looking at about 45,000 cubic yards. At $40 a cubic yard, that's almost $2 million just for that rock excavation to happen in that undesignated section. And you're looking at over 2,000 truck trips to take that rock out of there. And that doesn't even include disposal of the rock and placement of the rock wherever it's being taken. So, it's not an insignificant constraint on this undesignated section when you consider the dual use. Just zooming back out to the larger study, those are the four points of comparison in the undesignated section. Further east, there are more constraints, which we won't get into, but they include the C9 Bridge, the at-grade crossing over 209, Pearly Mountain Road, and there's a large hill section north of Hurley Mountain Road where the railroad is on a prism with steep, steep slopes going back. That's wooded, and that would require some significant grading to either bring and fill and bench a trail in or some other scenario. So there's always other solutions. there's all variations in what I've just presented, in the in-between, I call it. But a lot has to do with more investigation, more study, creative thinking, and I'm going to say it for dual use through the undesignated section, a lot of funding. So I'll tell you, happy to take questions. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. In the rock cut area, do your plans call for moving the track from the center off to the side?
Our assumption is that the tracks would stay. They could certainly move, but with only a couple feet to give, it doesn't seem likely that that would gain you anything. So I would say that you would keep the tracks in place.
Because I know that you're speaking with folks at the council.
Can you use your mic, please?
Oh, I'm so sorry. So I know that from speaking with folks of the Catskill Mountain Railroad, it was implied that moving the tracks off to the side would not be, I think the term used was not that big of a deal. And so if we were to move the tracks, either to the right or the left, whichever, do you think that would permit enough space to have rail and trail going through this? Would that give you the 26 feet that's required?
It would not. Right. And then you'd have to think about clearances on the side, the track side that you're moving. You know, you really have to have a minimum. You got to think about rock fall,
right.
Trees. You know, there's a lot of considerations in here, especially if there's public money involved.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a follow-up question, if I could. I was also wondering if anyone had looked at the possibility of perhaps putting the trail portion above, like say on the top of that ridge?
I think you're space constrained with property.
So you run into issues of private property and required yeah. right-of-ways?
Yeah, especially through this rock cut.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I have a picture of it. There's a lot of industrial activity happening on both sides. It's on the left. You can see there's a large, I think it's a concrete plant or some other kind of activity off of 28.
Right.
And then on the south side of the line up in the town of Kingston is another industrial yard that's right up against your guys' property. So there's a lot, you know, that's like threading a needle. And,
yeah.
and we did not study that specifically. My inclination is that there's space constraints and slope constraints in that scenario.
And in that same scenario, you had mentioned the problem of the rock face being unstable. So I guess that would be another factor to consider if we were thinking about perhaps putting a trail at the top.
Yeah, that would require a lot of geotechnical analysis to figure out what that rock can safely handle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Anyone else? Legislators only, please.
Okay.
I have a question.
One second. Let me do the legislators first. Any other legislators?
I'm just wondering, because you mentioned a few times that there would be some property taking. Do you have an idea of the total kind of amounts of property that would have to be negotiated?
I don't think it's a lot. And I know the county's done this in the past when working on these. And it's an arduous process and takes time. But at Beesmer Road, I don't think at either location it's a lot. But I think it's likely that it would require it. Yeah.
And then just one more question. Are you aware of any funding that might help to offset some of the extraction or any of the development?
Unless it's built into the overall project, not specifically for that kind of work, no.
Legislator Nolan first, and Legislator Uchitel for the first time, and then Legislator Stewart for the second time.
For the Beesmer Road Bridge, one of the concerns I've had in looking at that is whether or not that bridge is safe for what the county needs currently, and whether we can anticipate that it would remain in that at that height and at that width for railroad use, even if we were contemplating building an adjacent pedestrian bridge. Do you have an opinion on that?
Our assessment is that the bridge is in pretty good condition, but it's probably in the tail end of its life, being pretty old. I think the stamp and the concrete might be 1913, you know, so 100 years old. But you'd have to do a closer look, but our initial assessment and the study is that it's suitable for the railroad now and would be for trail. Yeah.
You mentioned the cost estimate for the, you know,
sure,
all the cubic yardage of fill that would need to be removed in the rock cut. There's a lot of other costs that you hinted at. Do you have any estimates for any of the crossings or any of the other parts of the whole dynamic here?
So across the entire corridor, a lot depends, and it's a couple years old, and I think it's a whole different world now in terms of constructability. But we were looking at a factor of 4 to 5 times rail to trail versus rail to trail. So our trail only estimate a couple years ago was about 15, 17 million to convert the whole thing. You're looking upwards of 50 million plus to put in trail, rail with trail scenario across the entire corridor. It's significant.
And those are prices from years ago?
Yeah, from 2022 we did the estimates, yeah. And that doesn't include any takings or...
But it doesn't
have a lot of process involved in that.
So that's just the...
that's like the purely...
The infrastructure.
Constructability, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it could be potentially far more than that through the... through the fact that materials have increased, labor has increased, and the taking of private property. It's not even capital within that.
No.
Okay.
And again, we're at a feasibility level, so there's a lot of factors of safety built into those numbers that would have to be... proven out as you get deeper into design and start to make selections and decisions on how this would actually happen. But generally speaking, we're looking at that kind of a scale difference, 4 to 5 times more expensive.
Leslie Stewart.
I had a question going back to the Beesmer Bridge.
Sure.
So the existing bridge that the tracks currently lie on is 100 something years old, and that you say that may or may not require being rebuilt or reinforced, or
I think currently it's fine, but mm-hmm. I think it's probably safe to expect that that would require some work in the general short period, next 10 years.
And for the pedestrian bridge that could be installed next to that, do you have an estimate for like the cost of that?
Probably with abutments. It's not very wide, but it's really the foundation and the fill. So you're looking at probably $150,000
to $250,000. Oh, okay.
Thumbnail.
Also, there's another bridge that the tracks do not currently cross. This is the bridge that is at that goes over Basin Road.
Right.
That would connect this project with the Ashokan Trail. Would that bridge also require additional work, or was that included in your study?
It was not. The assumption was that the rail use would end at the FAI property, and that any extension of the Ashokan would come across the Basin Road Bridge, so it would be a transitioning from a rail bridge into a trail bridge, which, in our experience, they're built for railroads, they can handle.
That can handle pedestrians, it's built for trains.
Yeah.
So, okay.
That is a steel plate girder bridge, and it's in pretty good shape. But it probably would require refurb to be brought up to standard to make it into a trail bridge.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that.
Lister Litz.
Thank you. it was my understanding that any improvements necessary for the railroad portion would be borne by the railroad. So basically, the county would have to build the trail portion in any case, whether it's just trail or it's rail plus trail. So a lot of these estimates you're talking about, I mean, I'm sure the railroad would be very interested in what the dollar value is, but as far as the county's concerned, it's not our problem, it's the railroad's.
We didn't contemplate any railroad upgrade costs in our estimate. It was purely widening this to accommodate trail or making it into pulling up the rail and making it a trail. So we assumed the same understanding as you, Mr. Litz, is that the railroad would bear costs for the railroad.
Just to be, I want to make sure I understand that your estimate, rough estimate.
Yep.
Was just essentially to widen the corridor sufficiently enough to have both.
And to build the trail.
And to build the trail.
Correct.
Okay.
Sorry, thank you. I had a question about the section where the trail, where the rail currently crosses the wetlands.
Sure.
As it is now, is that wide enough? Is that the 26 and a half feet requisite?
It's not.
It's not. So I was wondering, if we were talking about perhaps widening the rock cut, if the rocks removed from the cut could be used to widen the prism, is that the term used?
Yep.
To widen the prism, the platform on which the rails currently sits.
It certainly could. Using fill would probably require filling of wetlands, which would be a much larger lift than, say, building an elevated boardwalk with piers across the wetland, which is another scenario here that could negate this DEC wetland issue a little bit. You still need permitting, but I think it's similar in the Ashokan section. There's a section of boardwalk trail to carry over an environmentally constrained area. You could do the same thing here. And they have different cost implications.
Yes. Right? And you did the cost analysis for doing the raised boardwalk?
We did not. It was just widening with the fill, assuming we could go through a permit.
But that would be feasible, assuming that you could get the appropriate permits from...
Correct. You could you could widen this prism to accommodate a trail. What I'm suggesting is that there's going to be wetland impacts that require permitting.
And obviously the wetland impacts would be considerably less if we were talking about a raised boardwalk as opposed to actually filling in the wetlands.
Yeah. So it's kind of a worst case scenario, right? Better scenario. And these are the kinds of, this is the level of design that we have not gotten into. And so we're taking a 30,000 foot view here of the whole thing. There'll be decisions that have to be made in engineering that'll drive that cost and the permitting.
Okay, well thank you again for that.
Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thank you. So, in scenarios like that boardwalk, are you assuming that the railroad would, the CMRR, would cover the cost, the additional cost that the county would incur from trying to do railroad trail? Because it seems like if that's part of the trail, that you were including that in trail costs. So
we didn't make distinctions on who's paying for what. It was more about, if you need to widen this constrained area to accommodate the trail, here's what it would take. Yeah.
And I also wonder if you looked at maintenance cost, because my understanding is the cost for maintaining rail is quite a large factor, higher than the cost of maintaining trail. So if you could comment on that, and also, do we increase the cost of maintaining trail if there's a rail with trail?
I don't have an idea what it costs to maintain a rail, but generally speaking, and a lot of the folks that I talk to in the Greenway Trail space, you're probably looking at $5,000 to $10,000 a mile per year for trail maintenance. And that would include mowing and blowing, making sure the drainage is clear, fallen trees. So generally speaking, you're in that $5,000 to $10,000, depending on the mile.
And I'm sorry, that's cost per mile, you said?
Cost per mile.
Thank you.
Per year.
Any other questions from the legislators? I'm going to take a poll here. Do the legislators want to have public comment or public questions?
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question regarding that?
Absolutely.
If we were to do that, which I think would be a good idea, could we put a time limit on that, or would it just be...
I think we'll have questions only at this point.
100 questions.
Just questions only. Are y'all good with that?
Yeah.
I get a lot of nodding, yeah, that sounds good. Okay, so we will take questions from the public. Please raise your hands. In the back over here.
Yes, good question. Has OSI done any studies regarding daily usage of trails as compared to rails or both?
We know of numbers for trail use, specifically off of the Shelton Rail Trail. The DEP has trail counters, and they share that information with us. We did a companion economic impact assessment of this feasibility study. And through that, we projected based on real trail counts, and you're looking at the Shokan's at about just under 200,000 trips a year, is our best estimation.
Excuse me, so we need your name for the records.
David Barra.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Kevin.
Hi, Kevin Smith, Trails Advisory Committee. Peter, do you have any estimates for, right now we have a destination rail trail, the Shokan Rail Trail, which is drawing these kinds of numbers every year. We have the numbers of our countywide trails, our multi-use trails, and shared use trails, and the Empire State Trail, which runs now through the core of our trail system. Did you do any kind of calculations for what to anticipate if we were to connect the Empire State Trail and the county network to the Shokan Rail Trail?
Can you
repeat the question, please?
So the question was, and I'll try to paraphrase it.
Thank you.
Is there an estimate of what the impact would be on use if the Empire State Trail was connected to the UND corridor?
And if I could just add to that, a comparison example of the River to Ridge Trail, for instance, which connects to Mohawk Preserve carriage roads and to the Empire State Trail in New Paltz.
Yeah.
Thanks.
The extension of the question was to compare it to another situation where the Empire State Trail connects with an interior trail.
Kevin, not specifically. What our companion economic impact assessment looked at was extending the Shogun Rail Trail to Kingston and what that might mean. And that we used the same firm that did the economic assessment for the Shokan Rail Trail back in 2013. We basically determined based on real trail numbers provided on the Shokan Rail Trail that it outperformed projections. So applying that same projection to adding the 6.5 miles to Kingston, I'll just say the sum is greater, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So there's a compounding effect on numbers when you provide connectivity, especially from population center.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Gentleman in the back.
Hi, my name is Larry Roth. I would like to ask a question too. When you talk about 200,000 annual visitors to the Shokan Rail Trail,
yeah,
can you break those numbers down? How many of those are unique visitors coming from out of the county who are supposedly bringing in the tourism dollars?
Yeah.
How many of them are local people who are there, their money is already here, and how many of them are local repeat users who are simply there? How much of the trail are they using? Do they get beyond the parking lots any distance, or do they use the entire trail? We're talking about just saying raw numbers of how many people use the trail. Does not really give
the question's clear. Excuse me, sir. Sir, I believe the question's clear, so just ask the question and let the response happen instead of... Please.
Please, enlighten me.
So there was about 6 questions in there. But what I'll say is, we look... Trail counters count trips. They don't count people and where they come from or how far they're going. You can get a little bit of that depending on where your trail counters are, but what DEP is doing does not. It's mostly at the trailheads. These are statistical assessments, so you can't say concretely there's this number. That's why I say approximately, and I use the trips nomenclature and not visitors. Generally speaking, it's about 50-50. Half the people are from Ulster County, half the people are from outside.
Can you document that?
So we've provided our assessment to the committee, and that's in a report form. So that could be made available.
Legislator Stewart.
We did, in support of that, we did go out and actually do surveys with people on the ground and ask them questions. But again, this is all statistics. They're all projections. They're not intended to be concrete numbers.
Kind of along those same lines,
sure.
I had a follow-up question. I know that one of the advantages of perhaps doing, you know, this project at Basin Road would be that they would be allowed to then advertise this along the thruway. Was that impact taken in consideration in your estimate of usage?
When you say they,
let me clarify the question if that's okay.
Sure.
The current Ashokan rail trail cannot be posted on the thruway because there's no fixed bathroom. By establishing a fixed bathroom that connects to the Ashokan rail trail, it can be posted as a tourist attraction on the thruway, bringing more visitors in. And the question, I think,
yeah.
That's the question.
Yes, thank you for that clarification, Chair.
Yeah, we did not consider that, no. We didn't look at trail side amenities. We were strictly looking at the creating that travel way through the corridor. Yeah.
Right, and in so doing that, it would be similar to having like the walkway over the Hudson, where you're allowed to advertise that on the thruway. So
it could be.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any others? Wayne back, the woman, sir.
Hi. I would just want to know about the health.
Excuse me. I need your name. We need the name, please.
Star. And I would just ask about the health and safety, because that's going to be that many more miles of basically, you know, more wilderness, and a lot of people, like, that's being more EMT use and more police officer use. So how much money will that? You know, we're already dealing with a lot of people not volunteering our small towns already. That much more pressure, and the law enforcement have their hands full with what's going on now. So I want to know that aspect, because that's been budgeted and what that will cost. And
during a feasibility assessment, no.
So that the maintenance level, and then also the garbage. Like, so considering that a lot of the problems we're also having, bringing the wilderness to everybody in the world, is that now we're really dealing with a lot of glass and all these things where we need forest rangers, and so $10,000-$15,000 to maintain doesn't even seem like the amount of garbage. So is that all assessed also in that, and recycle, whatever recycling or something?
I was simply stating kind of an industry standard. How people budget for maintenance of the greenway trails.
Okay.
So, I mean, the lot's gonna, like I said, it depends on the mile. It depends.
Yeah.
So, we did not look
so
at maintenance costs specifically.
So that's not at all the source.
We strictly looked at capital costs to build a trail next to the rail and what that would physically take from a constructability standpoint.
Okay. So, not the bigger civil and natural structure part. Okay. Thank you so much.
Any other questions in the back? I'm sorry, I'm going to go to the legislator first. Legislator Chitone.
I just wanted to say that I think we can get economic data from our tourism department regarding the Ashokan Rail Trail. And we can also get safety information regarding, you know, police calls, EMT calls. My sense of this is it actually doesn't look like any... We're not making some... deep woods access suddenly available. This is, you know, a connector between things that are already have that level of coverage. But I think that data should be pretty easy to access between our tourism department and our emergency services department within the county. We can get that. And I would just request that the chair, or if I can help at all, get that information for the next meeting. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get that. In the back,
Ken Onello. So the rock cut is one of the biggest obstacles that you have if you were to go with rail, with trail. If it was to be just trail, okay, and you say that the rock cut is fragile, breaking apart, would it then still need to be increased in width? So would the rock still need to be removed? What would your estimate be on the amount of rock removed, the cost, of course, and the impact that these trucks would have on the roads, removing all that
Yeah, if the rails would come up and it would be just trail, it would fit within the existing cut. You would likely have to go and stretch and pull and scale that rock cut and remove any of the debris that falls on the bottom. And if you can see in the photographs, if I can get to one. Yeah, on the bottom, you see that angle of leaves on the bottom? That's all fallen rock that's just fallen to the bottom. So that'll all have to be cleaned out. But really, it's in my experience, you go through and you can scale that rock and pull the loose stuff down. Right now, it would all have to be removed. So I don't have an estimate on that.
Okay, yeah. But you have to make it how wide?
That current width of the existing would be wide enough to put a trail through there, okay, without having to do that major rock removal as I was describing for the tool use. Yeah. If the train fits, the trail will fit.
But on a safety perspective, you'd have to remove some of the saws.
Yeah, you'd have to make sure that you don't, you know, things aren't going to...
Would you have to take some property?
No, not in that scenario.
Ernie.
Yes, sir. Ernie Hunt, Catherine from Railroad. The estimates that you gave, were they for all the way from Kingston to
Yes.
So for the 2 mile, for the 1.67 mile section, do you know the numbers for trail only and rail trail?
I don't have that broken out, no.
Is that something you could provide the committee?
We could probably do that, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
We can also address that with the planning board, Ulster County Planning Board.
Could you repeat that request? We just couldn't hear it.
The request was to understand the cost of just rail with trail in the corridor itself, the 1.6 to 1.7 miles of the undesignated corridor, not including the section from 28A into Kingston. There's a question. Actually, I'm going to go to the legislator first.
Well, just to follow up, is the most expensive part the part that's in the undesignated section where it's... we've seen these complications, or are the complications that you pointed to nearer to Kingston possibly as extensive?
I would say more, and the big one is 209, where our study contemplates a new bridge over 209, which would be in three segments, about 300 foot of bridge with abutments to carry that trail over the highway. It's a 55 mile an hour road, and I can't imagine that DOT is going to allow MAC grade crossing on that highway. So we effectively, in the study, bit the bullet and said, we need to go over. And I would also say that that's all in floodplain, through Sopus Creek, being in the fields there. So there's a lot of considerations and a lot of merit to actually going up than trying to go, I guess, at grade or under, for that matter.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And just real quick, that bridge would be how long going over Route 209?
We contemplated it was about 300 feet in three segments. So if you can imagine a small ramp to a bridge, a sloped bridge, and then a center span that goes over the highway supported by standalone abutments. So effectively three bridges to get over. I think the clearance is about 17 feet you need for that highway. So there's about 1,000 feet of run on either side to get up to that elevation.
Thank you.
Yeah. In the back.
Yeah, Jim Latour. A couple questions. One is, why can't you cantilever off the bridge for a passenger walkway, the bridge you're talking about that goes over to Sopus River?
The C9 bridge?
Yeah.
Why can't you cantilever?
Why can't you cantilever off of that for a walkway?
That would have to be assessed by an engineer. I don't have an answer to that.
And my second question is, did you do an assessment of the ridership on the Catskill Mountain Railroad in lieu of that disappearing as far as the usage, as far as the rail trail? Have you done that assessment?
Can you clarify that question?
Yes, the usage that would go away if the railroad went away.
Mm-hmm.
For the number of ridership that takes place, I'm assuming it's quite large. And the disparity of just making it a walkway and that ridership that you would lose. Did you put that into the assessment?
So you're saying that, what is the delta between the projection of trail use versus loss
yes.
of
yes.
the railroad
yes.
use?
Yes.
So we did not do that assessment. Yeah.
Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, so again on this question, under this scenario, the CMRR would continue operating where they are operating, if you're just talking about the undesignated section. So there would be no loss of CMRR ridership.
If we're just talking about the undesignated, yeah.
We are the undesignated corridor committee, so that's what I'm talking about. Just to be clear.
Well, right, there's neither use in the undesignated corridor right now, so that's right. Both zero.
Over here.
Yeah, I've got a question. So nobody has looked at...
Sir, we need your name first.
Sorry. Jeremy Swift. There's nobody's looked at the feasibility of actually a street-level crossing where a 2 and 9 meets Hurley, because that is a choke point where there's already an intersection, there's already traffic coming four directions, there's already a rail trail crossing the street and a parking lot right there. I would think that that's a place where you already have a choke point, people have to slow down. You could put in, you know, a designated crossing with a light, so when people need to get across, they can create space.
I'm not entirely clear.
Then you're on, I think, a Marcotte or something like that, near where the Hurley Court is there.
I believe the gentleman is referring to where the train crosses 209 near the State Trooper Barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Right, no, there's a section of the trail that you know, there's already the rail trail that's paved that goes down 209. That intersects near the elementary school with the actual little village there of Hurley, where the court is. There's a Stewart's right there. There's an intersection right there. Is there no way to connect through that corridor and then come back? Because then
I see. So you're suggesting using the O&W coming out of Kingston.
Correct. Connecting the O&W
and crossing 209 further south.
Rail trail.
Yeah.
And then coming back north.
And then you've got connectivity between all
the
rail
corridor.
Trails sort of off.
We looked at that scenario, I will say, six ways to Sunday, because
yeah.
We were looking at how do you solve this 209 problem.
I'm sure a lot of people would like a light there anyway.
So there is an underpass of where the O&W trailhead, that where the O&W project ends,
mm-hmm.
that was completed last year, and then a little further south is where the road, that's where the village of Hurley is. So
mm-hmm.
That's certainly a possibility. There are issues around floodplain. That's all Osopus Creek floodplain. But I will say that it adds about 2 miles or more of distance just to get around that one road crossing.
Right, but that's all protected lane also, right? That's all rail trail as well.
It's rail trail on the east side of 209.
Right.
It's the farm hub on the west side of 209, so it's all private land.
Right. Okay. That's the farm hub, right?
That's the farm hub, yep.
Right. I wonder if they'd be amenable to the non-profit that they are.
Yeah.
Okay, over here.
Did you guys...
Sorry, need your name, sir.
Hi, Tom LaFerra. Did you guys consider using the concrete underpass?
We did.
You did?
Yep. Again, it just adds a lot of distance to get back to the same point. It's not infeasible, but it's private land on the other side.
Yeah, but maybe an amenable private owner.
Potentially.
Over here in the back.
Right now...
Excuse me, I need your name, sir.
Skip Alford. The train now can go up to Route 28A now. Why not just have that start of the rail trail there? They could bring people to that point, and then people would cross the road and go on the rail trail right there. And it seems like it would be a lot less cost-effective, a lot more cost-effective.
Yeah, I think that's what's under consideration, what to do.
Again, we do not... This particular committee does not address 28A toward Kingston. We're 28A to the west, not 28A to the east. It's a different section. All the way in the back.
Did your study ever...
Excuse me, sir, I need your name.
...take into effect that the railroad, if it went all the way up to Basin Road, would bring a lot of tourism up to Basin Road, first of all. And secondly, it would be in charge of fixing trail alongside the railroad, and no cost to the county whatsoever, the railroad would be in charge. Isn't that the best scenario today?
Excuse me, I need your name, sir.
What's that?
I need your name.
Brian Platt.
Thank you.
What the best scenario is for me to determine. We really just looked at whether...
Yeah, just to be clear, this is an assessment by an independent agency. This is not an assessment by the county. It's not an assessment by this committee. It's someone who was presenting to the county for us to learn what they have found. So again, there's no plans coming out of this. We're learning with you what has been assessed, what's been looked at. So again, it's an independent nonprofit that has done some work in this area and is giving us information that they have found and that they've researched. So again, that's where we stand with this. I'm going to go with Meg first.
Meg Carey, I want to be sure that I understand what you were saying.
Sure.
That there is, it's certainly doable to do a rail with trail. And it's also doable to do just a trail. But there are significant costs associated with both of them. So that if the county should decide that we want to have both, there's a cost, but there's a cost with trail only. So I just want to be clear that this is definitely doable to have both rail and trail.
I would say that it is not infeasible to do rail with trail.
Not infeasible.
It's not infeasible, meaning it can be done.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a matter of cost and impact. Right.
Larry Roth again. Would it be fair to say that your information here is basically looking at just two scenarios, rail with trail and trail only, and you have not really looked at going ahead with expansion plans the railroad is proposing and what the impact of that would be? For example, you have a direct connection from Kingston to the Basin Road area where the Ashokan Trail starts, and this would open it up for a lot of casual use, not just for people who are prepared to hike that distance or ride their bicycle. This could be anyone in the city of any health condition who would be happy to board a train or even a shuttle during the week just to be able to go back and forth.
So this is an engineering feasibility study. It is not looking at all of these.
So you're saying
this
is a very incomplete picture overall.
I'm saying it's a focused picture.
To be clear, we did not ask that question of him. We asked the question of what, the question that he was tasked to address at this meeting was what it would look like to do rail and trail in the corridor. We're not trying to, he's not a county planner.
Well,
he's not,
fair.
He's
I'm
not
here to ask those questions, so we're all good.
Well, exactly. So it's, you know, Those kinds of questions are a larger question than we would have this presentation for. Yeah.
Hi, Jim Latour again. I just wanted to know, I don't know if I heard correctly or if I didn't hear it all, or why can't you take the spoils from the rock cut and deposit them in the swampy area and build up from there?
You could.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just a matter of
less cost.
It's a matter of moving materials.
Right.
And there's costs associated.
You don't have to get rid of the stone, okay? So
yeah.
You can incorporate that into the grand plan. You can use it as a foundation to build up more.
Yeah. At the amounts we're looking at though, I think it's fair to say that there would be export coming out of that rock cut. Yeah. Well, you could certainly
I just want to refocus again. That what you're talking about when you say it's a matter of cost is engineering and economic cost. You're not taking into account environmental cost, and what you were looking at was not looking at health benefits or social benefits. So your study is focused on the engineering aspects and the economics of that.
Yeah, and the constructability of the dual use. Yeah. Yeah. What would it take to do it?
I'm going to take one more question, and then we'll come back to the session here. Over here in the back.
Scott Markle. I have a question. Currently, the railroad doesn't make it across 209, right? As I understand it, the railroad has plans for expansion. They wish to extend further in the future. How realistic is that plan in terms of their ability to finance that? And why would we?
I think that's not a question I think that's not a question we can answer right here. I think that's a real.
But it seems to me that the spending four to five times as much money to accommodate the railroad when we don't know that the railroad even has finance.
The railroad's a private entity, and it's not. A question that we can answer.
But why would the county entertain spending that kind of money when it's not clear whether the railroad even has the ability to do that, make those improvements?
I understand your question. I can't answer that question right now.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do two more. I'll do one and then two.
Right. Ken Anello again. Going back to what Meg was asking a little while ago. So I think you said that we're talking about the 1.6 miles and that rail with trail would be in the, based on what, 2013 estimates of $50 million, or is that a current estimate?
Well, that was for the whole corridor.
The whole
corridor. Number, yeah, the 6.5 miles.
Have you been able to break it up on the 1.6?
That's what Mr. Hunt asked, and they're gonna, I have to break that out.
That's today's prices.
That's today's prices?
That's 2 years ago.
And just the trail only is about $15 million. Is that what the number was?
About 15 to 17.
15 versus 50, just for the whole corridor.
For the whole corridor.
And another thing?
I would say, I'll clarify with assumptions, right? With certain assumptions.
Right. So and the other question is that if you were able to use the material from the rock cut for the DEC low area, what's the distance to have to bring that from A to B?
That's not far.
Like a mile?
Maybe.
Okay. The whole corridor is 1.6 miles total. So
what's the question is that, you know, any excess that would have to get exported, it depends on where it's going, how far it is, and how it's placed. It's almost every time you handle material, it costs.
Right.
So it's in a constructability kind of thing.
Okay, so the last question was over here.
Yeah, hi, Lee Kalish. I actually, you pretty much addressed it, but thank you for all your work on this. What I just wanted was a nice clarification of what he was, I think, asking, which is the numbers. Like, is it the whole corridor or just the undesignated section we're talking about? But as much information as you have, or, you know, getting over the Osophis Creek is obviously a significant issue, whether we go over the C9 or whether we go underneath the trail or we go to Hurley. At some point, we have to cross the creek. All of the bridge costs, the 209, if you can just sort of summarize what your numbers are in terms of trail only, rail with trail.
Sure.
And kind of give us
From the cost estimate perspective, we, you know, our study was the whole corridor, and I've tried to break out the undesignated section because that's the focus of this committee's inquiry. But across the whole corridor, you're looking at probably a 4 to 5 times factor. So if the trail only, conversion of the 6.5 miles to trail only is about $15 million, right, 4 times that, you know, you're over $50 million to go rail with trail. That's for the 6.5 miles. I don't have a breakout of just the undesignated section, but it would include rock removal through the rock cut, new bridge at Beesmer Road, you got the DEC issues, and then that at-grade crossing at 28A, specifically in the undesignated section.
That's
the constraints.
It doesn't include acquiring property.
It does not include any takings or acquiring that I have to do, may have to do, I'd say.
Okay, I'm going to close this portion of the meeting. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Questions.
I'd just like to submit some additional material. This is a list of 447 rail and trail crossings.
This is a list of 447 rails with trails across the country.
Okay, excuse me, sir. This is my meeting, not yours. On the agenda, we do have a discussion on the letter. Does the legislator feel like having a discussion on the letter? It's up to you guys.
Which letter?
The letter from the Ernie Hunt letter.
The one dated September 23rd?
Correct. Okay.
I mean, I have lots of thoughts about it. I'm going to share it with him privately, but I'm happy to share them here as well.
It's up to you.
So we have to get out of here.
Okay, unless the legislature has something else that they would like to discuss, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Motion seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everybody.